Super fired up about today's show. I have Brandon Banks and Jesse Meeker. They are the founders of the Placer Sporting Club. And we're going to share their story of this business that's really been built based upon their time in the military and the experience that that they have, not only in entrepreneurship, but in law enforcement. And I think the Sporting Club, it sounds like a fun place to be, and it is, but they're helping a lot of us really think about the responsible way to own a gun. And we all know that no matter what, I think when it comes to personal responsibility, whether you own a gun or something else that that has the ability to kill somebody or hurt somebody severely, I mean, I think it's important that we use those things responsibly. And I think that's what Jesse and Brandon are doing. So excited to share their story, excited to get you thinking a little bit differently. And really, you're going to hear a story about somebody who's building a business through the COVID crisis. And this is something that there's a lot of topical information that you're going to hear today that will help you to be thinking about like the state of where we are right now as a country. And it does tie to responsible gun ownership. So stick around. I think you're going to enjoy today's show. All right. You know, today I have the privilege of being joined by a couple of local guys who have partnered up to build a business that I'm very intrigued by right now. It is, I'm here with Brandon Banks and Jesse Meeker. They're the founders of the Placer Sporting Club. And it's a place where I recently became a client. And I had met Brandon a few, I'll say a year or two ago, entrepreneurial guy. And he and I met up and I found out what kind of business he was in, ends up introducing me to Jesse. And as I started thinking about my gun ownership, right? I own a couple of guns. What's the safest, best way for me to be a responsible gun owner? And one of the things I considered was getting my concealed weapons permit so I can, you know, carry a gun back and forth to the office or in other areas. And I'm like, well, maybe I better give Brandon and Jesse a call. And so they hooked me up. And today we're going to share a little bit of the story of what it went through with, you know, with my process of coming on board as a new client, but also how they built the company and then what it means to be a responsible gun owner, because I think this is front and center in today's society is, look, how do we be safe in a world where a lot of people are carrying guns? And as former law enforcement and military guys, these guys know how to do it. So Jesse, Brandon, great to meet you guys. Jesse, maybe I'll start off with you since you're the guy that sort of walked me through. Let's talk about the company, the overview of your company. How did you and Brandon ended up find a way to partner up on this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So Brandon and I have been best friends since high school. I was out in Arizona working as a cop when he actually founded our other company, Security and Firearms Training Academy, back in 2012. So when we were talking during the process and he was telling me what he was doing, and he kept trying to convince me that it was the right move for me to come back to California and help him out. Didn't jump on it right away, but the seed was planted. And a couple years later, my wife and I decided that we should do it, that we're young enough that if we are going to do it, now would be the time. So end of 2014, we took the plunge, came over here, started working with Brandon on growing SAFTA, and we're pretty successful at that. But we never had our own shooting facility, so we were using the other public ranges in the area. And I kept badgering Brandon, hey, we need our own facility, we need our own lanes. And we had started really seriously discussing the possibility of that and started going down the road of looking to buy some land to build SAFTA its own facility with, you know, small five lanes or so that we could utilize. And that's how Placer Sporting Club came to be.
So Brandon, you're already an entrepreneur. You're a business guy. I know you have other business ventures as well and a lot of success. And I think you may have saw me going in and out of a coffee shop or something. Somehow we connected up and I didn't realize the extent. And then your children go to the same school as my grandchildren. So there's a lot of different areas where you and I sort of intersect in our lives beyond entrepreneurship. And then so when this opportunity came about for me to understand more about gun ownership, I thought of you, right? So walk us through, if you will, the totality of the business. What all do you do? And maybe what's most, I guess, hot right now?
Sure. You're right. Our paths crossed a number of times. Actually, I think we saw you at Cal Fit a number of times with the youth soccer program out there, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then I remember playing in your fundraiser golf tournament, which was an outstanding event.
That's right. Yes.
And, that was a lot of fun and your son was there and we kind of connected with the whole Marine Corps angle and it's been great. And getting to know you has been awesome. So to Jesse's point, I'll try to create some kind of divide here. Security and Firearm Training Academy is a company that's been around since 2012 and that company was founded mostly to focus on the private security industry, licensing and training private security guards. There was a big void for that in this area. Quite frankly, there's a big void for that all over the place in terms of high quality training for the private security sector. You might be surprised to know kind of what a lot of those training facilities might look like. And so with my kind of Marine Corps background, a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit and some connections, we started SAFTA for that purpose. And then we started getting into, as you referenced, concealed weapons permit training. Actually, that was very early on in the process. And that's something that's grown pretty dramatically and especially recently. But I think to your question that you just asked, as it relates to Placer Sporting Club specifically, that's a company that we started, Jesse and I started this together. Jesse, when was that? September of 18? Open doors in March of 19, I believe.
Correct.
And that was basically founded for two purposes. One was for it to be the range that we needed to do our high quality training for SAFTA. So we opened up Placer Sporting Club to be that vehicle that we can utilize for SAFTA's training. But it's got an entirely different business model associated with it. It's a private members only shooting range. So we're not open to the public, and as you know, Mark, it's an extremely different environment than a lot of the public ranges that you might be used to seeing out there. Mm-hmm. Nobody can just walk in off the street and come shoot. You can't just pay and shoot like you're used to doing at most shooting ranges. Everybody that shoots at our facility is either a member, a guest of a member, or they're going through a training course with either us or one of our kind of preferred training partners. The nice thing about our membership base is that every single member is subject to a background check. So from that standpoint, it's a safe facility. But even more importantly, like taking that a small step further, we take the safety aspect of it very, very, very seriously. So you're not going to run into a lot of those same kind of typical weapon safety issues that you're going to see at a lot of the ranges where people come and they've never really shot guns before and they just show up and they rent a gun and they go shoot. It's very much not like that. With all that said, the business model and what's hot right now is in light of current events, which you can kind of surmise what those all might be, there's been a lot of demand. I mean, I think we entered the March COVID kind of crisis. Jesse, how many members? We're looking around under 400, three something.
I think it was closer to four, right around 400.
Right around 400 members. Yeah. And in the past, what has that been, 5 months now? it's grown by probably 60% from there or something like that, right? And it's kind of interesting, Mark, because we have so many friends, Jesse and I both, that have been long-time friends of ours that have always kind of been on the fringe with firearms, right? You've got either people who go, I never really felt like I had a need for a firearm or for a gun in my house or on my person. Or they've kind of gone, you know, I thought about it, but I never was really willing to take that step. And what seems to have happened over this past, you know, half a dozen months or so is that the pendulum has shifted to people saying, I think it's time. Now's the time. I want to go ahead and either buy a gun or learn how to use a gun that, that maybe my dad gave me or something like that. But I need to get trained, right? So a lot of interest has been coming in. We curate our membership base based on a number of factors. But the bottom line is if you're safe, if you're an enthusiast, if you take it seriously, and if you're a good fit for our club, we can admit you. And if you don't have a background or a history in dealing with firearms and in a very safe manner, then that's when we start implementing the various courses that we have to teach these individuals, be it in an individual setting or a group setting, what responsible gun ownership might look like.
Yeah, and I'll walk through my experience too and maybe turn this into a question. So I think I'm an example, I suppose, of one of those people that today's climate put me in a position to do something. I've owned, I think I got my first gun as an adult. I was in my early 20s, really never did much shooting, if any, because it wasn't a priority. It was for a window, like a week, and then I lost my passion for it right after I got the gun. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur going out there and trying to build businesses and so on. And then I think this downtime, I think it maybe in two aspects of this, the downtime associated with the COVID, oh my gosh, my training, my physical training, you know, like workout schedule, the different routines that I had created in my life were disrupted. Our businesses were disrupted. I found myself with a little extra time to start checking off the list, these things that I've been sort of wanting to do for a long time. So it's been on my list. And so in that way, it became a little bit of a priority. And then I think also the social unrest maybe created sort of, you know what, if I'm going to own a gun, if there's going to be some kind of social unrest or civil unrest at some point, I want to be as responsible as I can to help protect my family. And as a person that's in the media at some level and known as an investor, it's always been sort of like a thing where, hey, you know what, I better make sure I can keep myself protected. Even though I'm a pretty state of myself guy, I never would provoke anything. I feel like in this environment, we all have to have sort of our route of staying most safe. And so that's what prompted me to reach out to you, Brandon. You said, then you hooked me up with Jesse. So I walk in there, Jesse. And I think at the beginning, what I was really impressed with, you guys were pretty slow at that point because it was during the initial parts of the COVID. And so you guys weren't, it wasn't busy on the first day when I went in there. I think you may have even met me after hours or like at the end of a day one day, and kind of gave me some hand-holding, if you will, refreshing me with stuff. But, I mean, is that customary where you guys would take somebody like myself who wants to be a little bit more handheld through maybe at least one or two days or one or two sessions and then break them into being basically trained and really functional on using the operation, becoming a member and being, you know, being able to use the facility without a lot of guidance, extra guidance. Is that traditional? Is that typical?
Yeah, very traditional, and it's actually very common. And okay. To everybody's point so far in the conversation, we have definitely seen an uptick in that. A lot of first-time gun owners that the end goal is they want to get a concealed carry permit. You've been through the course, Mark. The CCW course in and of itself isn't really designed to teach people how to shoot. It's more concerned with the legal aspects, the liability that comes along with carrying a firearm on your person during your normal day-to-day activities. So we always recommend for the first-time gun owners to do get some individual one-on-one basic handling of the firearm safety type of course like you and I did in the fall of, I think, 2019. Mm-hmm. And then kind of progress. And then once you get comfortable with the firearm, how to handle it and the safety there, then we can start working our way into the concealed carry training and learning about the law and the legal aspect of it. So that's always what we try to tell people to do. That's kind of the guidance that if they come to us can say that, that's the route that we push them down.
You know, Mark, it's interesting. I was just going to say it's interesting because I've got a lot of folks, I mean, look at teachers at schools and believe it or not, even like law enforcement, like wives of cops and or husbands if the cop's a female, either way. But, you know, people who, you know, you might have assumed would just have a general knowledge, and they kind of come to us and they go, we don't have, like, I don't have any idea. Like, I've never helped. Like, we have people, Jesse trains regularly. And to make this clear, Jesse's a licensed firearm instructor. He was an MP in the Army with a couple deployments. He was also a cop in Arizona for a number of years. And he kind of takes the lead on our training. And if he's not doing it himself, we outsource it to we've got a small subset of folks that we trust a lot. But we take a lot of people in who say, like, literally, I've never held a gun before. I need to learn it from day one. And there's things that you don't even think about. Like, if you're a gun owner, and you might be on the more beginner side, but if you've never held one, you don't know, I mean, how do I disassemble it to clean it? How often should I do that? How can I store ammo? Is ammo scary to store, or is it safe, right? Like, is the ammo need to be protected? The legal aspects of, like, where to lock it up and how to lock it up and how to carry it or transport it. So we're very aware that there are people that come to us at all different levels. I mean, we've got folks that come to us that are quite advanced, but the level of courses that we have, especially with some of the instructors that we partner with, can take you through pretty elite levels of training within our facility. Because it's a private facility and because it's a very wide open shooting range, right? We have 16 lanes all on one, like, warehouse, for lack of better terms. There's a lot of stuff that we'll do when we shut the range down, and we'll go forward of the line and do really tactical stuff, right? For the enthusiasts or the people that really want to continue progressing. But at the most beginner phases, we handhold folks that are scared. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, gals that come to us and say, I'm scared of guns. I've always been scared of guns, but I know that I need to know. So it's time. And we start them down their own path too. We just work with each person at whatever level of handholding is necessary.
Yeah, it's interesting because as I came in the first time, I was sort of at that level. I'd shot a gun, you know, a few times in my life. My son being a Marine, he's very comfortable around guns. And so he had done a little bit with me along with other gun owners that I know. And I think whenever you're a rookie gun owner or, you know, somebody who doesn't pick up a gun very often, every time you pick it up, it feels like you know you're holding something very dangerous, and so there's certainly a concern level, a heightened concern level that occurs, and so that was for sure how I felt when I came in to see you, Brandon. And by the way, I want to make sure that I describe their facility. It's beyond a 16-lane warehouse. This is a this is an area that's got a showroom. It's got conference rooms, training type facility, and it really is a club sort of environment. And the warehouse area is segregated off, so you've got to go through all this security, doors and so on to get through. So it's kind of an interesting atmosphere that you have to kind of go through a little bit of a process just to get to where you actually, to a location where you can actually shoot the gun. So you feel safe walking in, and it's not intimidating to walk in the door. But one of the things that I think drew my attention, I didn't really know I would feel this way, Jesse, and I want to thank you for this. When we went through our CCW class, and by the way, so I got my, ended up getting my concealed weapons permit. I went over to Placer County. It was painless. It took a little bit of a time because COVID and the government was sort of only doing certain things for a while there, but it happened and it was painless. Placer County treated me great and nice and smooth. And I've got a clean background, so it went pretty easily. But I think the part that, and I would say this to any gun owner, even if you don't want to get a CCW permit, you know, you don't really intend to carry a concealed weapon. I think some of the stuff that you taught me, Jesse, during that class and during some of that ongoing training was how to be thinking about your responsibility as a gun owner, right? So if you shoot somebody, that opens up, if you pull your gun from your holster, that opens up a whole different world. If you, you know, begin to fire it or shoot it to defend yourself. I mean, we're talking about having to put yourself in that mind, in that mindset. It's hard to do that just on your own. But when you describe it in, through your training, I was able to sort of sit there and go, what would I do? And you ask some of those open-ended questions that made, I think, the whole group of us think a little bit about the best way to deal with the different kinds of scenarios that are possible in our lives. So maybe you could share a little bit about that too, and just responsibility of you, your training. I want to talk a little bit later about, you know, well, training, actually you're training law enforcement people, but now when you're training the public, right, these guys are loose, potentially loose cannons, and you've got us, and we're these sponges. And now you've got this responsibility of making sure that you don't set us out there into the world in an irresponsible way.
Right. So always the first message that we try to get across is that the best defense is avoidance, right? Meaning don't get yourself into that situation where you need to potentially use a firearm in the first place, which again, don't always have 100% control over that. A lot of times people will get the CCW just to get the CCW so that they can carry a gun. And that's really the extent of the thought process. So the course, we really want to try to make sure that they understand the responsibility that comes along with carrying a loaded firearm, throughout their day-to-day lives. And sometimes people don't take it that far. So it's on us as instructors, to make sure that they realize that. And we do that by exactly what you said is, hey, if you're in a situation and you have to use the firearm, the first thing is we want to make sure that you understand when you're legally justified to do that. That's a big one. And then also take it a step further. And if you are in a situation where you're justified to use it and you end up using it, think about what the aftermath of that type of altercation is going to be. And we can't take it lightly. Obviously, with military background and law enforcement, that type of mentality is drilled into your head. And civilians, it's not. And so we have to find creative ways to get somebody who's never been in a situation like that to understand, hey, what the adrenaline's going to feel like, what the tunnel vision's going to be. And then we also discuss the potential legal aftermath of it as well, the liability that comes along with it, both on the criminal side and the civil side.
What do you do when you, everybody's got a radar when you notice somebody's sort of a fruitcake, right? There's one in every crowd that's irresponsible, and it's almost obvious. And there's these, and sometimes it's not as obvious, but there's indicators, right? There's these little flags that go, I don't know. My spidey sense says this guy shouldn't be own his own firearm, or maybe he needs extra help. How do you address the ones where you're, I don't know, you just don't feel that good about them, but they're coming in for your training? Do you feel like you can step in any way, or what do you do?
Absolutely. So as the instructor, I mean, we're signing that certificate that ends up going to, you know, Sheriff Bell at Placer County or Sheriff Jones in Sac County that says, hey, they've met the standard and we're comfortable with where they're at as far as their maturity level, their responsibility level. That's all on me. I'm 100%, not 100%, but there's a lot of vicarious liability that comes in on the instructor's side. So if there's the bad apple that you're referring to in the class, we'll pull them aside on a break and say, hey, that the comment that you made when I was discussing this, you got to change your mindset. And if I don't see improvement, it's kind of a gentle, hey, maybe we can come back later. Maybe it's I work with that person on an individual basis. But if they don't show it, then we don't pass them. We don't issue the certificate, and they can go find another instructor. So if we always have that vicarious liability, and at the end of the day, if I'm not 100% comfortable with the student, then we're not just going to pass them to pass them.
And I'll take that a small step further. Vicarious liability is a very important aspect of this, but moral responsibility is probably the most important aspect of this. And again, Jesse's the one that does this all day, every day. Not myself, but, you know, obviously very involved from an ethos of our company standpoint. And we take it extremely seriously, Mark. If we feel like there's somebody who's going to be unsafe or unstable with that firearm, there have been many of times that we've just, you know, drawn the hard line and, you know, refund the money and sorry, you know, this is not a good fit. And we'll explain to them the reasons why. Jesse's made it pretty clear. He'll counsel the person and help them understand why their mindset or mentality, or maybe it comes down to their actual proficiency. Like maybe they have the right mindset, but they just really can't get there from a proficiency standpoint. And that's when we remediate. But if there's ever a time that we feel like it's not the right move, then we will draw that hard line in the sand.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talk out there about legislation and gun control and all that. And, you know, you start to wonder because the stuff that gets on the news are the fruitcakes, I guess, that slip through the system, or people that maybe go temporarily insane and do stupid stuff. And I guess there's it's hard to put yourselves in the responsibility of solving those problems that, let's say, a gun retailer started. But it's good to hear that you guys, how seriously that you take that.
Yeah, and one more comment on that. You know, and to your point and comment earlier, Mark, we've had a lot of people who have taken our class. And I mean, one of my very best friends is one of them, with the intention to just go get a CCW. I got a gun, I'm gonna go get a CCW. And they walked out of the class saying, and this one time in particular I'm referencing, and he said, that was like the most great educational experience of my life, and I've learned and made the decision that I don't want a CCW, right? There's a responsibility associated with that that I'm not prepared for, and you guys have made that clear to me. So that's a small win as well, right? Because it's not meant for everybody. I mean, it's out there and available, right? But it's not meant for everybody. And some people really, we help them come to the determination on their own that maybe it's not a good fit for you. And that happens as well.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, listen, if you don't mind, I wanted to switch to the other aspect of your business, or at least what I take is the training for law enforcement, for security personnel. What's the name of that division again, or that company?
Called Security and Firearms Training Academy.
Okay. Oh, yeah. SAFTA. Yeah.
SAFTA. Yeah. And that was the initial company that kind of started this all.
Yeah. That's interesting because to me, that's also a hotter topic in society. And I'm, you know, with my son being military, I mean, I've got friends that are in law enforcement, a lot of friends in law enforcement. I have a former law enforcement person staying with us right now at our house, former detective from Riverside. And so it's like, I love cops. I love military by and large, and I certainly have the utmost respect as what I feel like are the most underpaid people on the planet. However, some of society right now is not holding law enforcement in such high regard at the moment, which is a crying shame because of maybe a few bad apples. But it also makes us think, well, how do we redouble the efforts to make sure that we've got the best trained security personnel that are carrying firearms out there so that we don't have as many examples as what we've seen. So thinking about that, that's a huge responsibility that you have in terms of like shaping the workforce that's helping keep us safe. Can we talk about that business a little bit?
I'll start with this and then I'm going to pass it to Jesse because he can speak more specifically to the folks that he's training. But I want to draw like a delineation between training law enforcement and training security personnel. We train a lot of law enforcement, but they're usually like former LEOs who are going to go get maybe CCWs or again, we talked about law enforcement, like, you know, spouses and things like that. Tons of military veterans and even active military who are looking to get into the private security sector. So we do train a lot of what I would say are kind of pre-qualified type folks. But we're not actually training the cops themselves, right? We're training the private security sector, not the public kind of peace officers. Right. So there's a different mindset there. It comes with, as you referenced, a huge responsibility. But maybe Jesse, you can speak to the responsibility associated with helping train folks that are out there protecting.
Yeah, and maybe through the lens of maybe someone like myself too, is if I'm somewhere where there's you know, obviously a cop that maybe works for a city or a metropolitan area. I realize that he's a police officer and he's supposed to have one, he or she is supposed to have one set of, I guess, capabilities and responsibilities. But I think we look to people who are in security and walking around with badges and carrying weapons. We look to those people to know what the hell they're doing.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's the goal of SAFTA, right? Because in today's, where we're at today, there's a huge demand for private security because of all sorts of factors. But the big one is that most law enforcement agencies are very, very busy. And so, Mark, if at one of your businesses you have a break-in or there's a trespass or some of those lower level, not really violent, not high priority calls, odds are you're not going to get a police officer or a deputy anytime soon, right? So a lot of private business owners and landowners are turning to the private security industry so that they can have that response. So those private security officers are now essentially the first line of defense for those business owners to protect their assets. And so that's a huge responsibility. And it's an interesting dynamic in that obviously there's not the vetting process or the application process, if you will, for private security compared to law enforcement isn't there. So that puts the onus on us to make sure that if you're going through our program, that you're going to do the right thing, that you do have a good head on your shoulders. You are going to be responsible. And we never lose sight of that when we're training our guys. Like Brandon said, we have a ton of veterans that come through because the transition out of the military into either law enforcement or private security, it's almost seamless. It takes all the same characteristics to be successful in the military that it does to be a good cop or to be a good private security officer. So we love it when veterans come through because they have that service mindset and they understand working in a team environment and putting the goal above their own personal goals, you know, that kind of that selflessness that's required, the integrity, the drive. You know, there's a lot of posts in private security where you're the only person there for 12 hours at a time, with no outside interaction, you know, so that takes some fortitude to be able to get through that entire shift and not stray and do silly stuff, I guess.
So obviously I'm a novice in any of this stuff, but are there credentialing aspects to becoming a private security officer? How extensive are there? Are there different levels?
Yeah, so the California agency that regulates private security is the BSIS, which is the Bureau of Security and Investigative Services. So that's who licenses SAFTA. That's who gives me my instructor licenses. As far as the training required, every guard in California is required to take 40 hours of training, and it's split up into three different levels. So level one is the powers to arrest, which is blanketed across the board. Any academy that you go to in California, it's the same course. The BSIS wrote it. We just basically administer that. Levels two and level three, we have the option based on different learning objectives that the state has come up with. We can pick and choose what additional courses we'll add into the program. There's 16 hours of mandatory that we have to do. And then the final 16 hours is elective. So the academy can pick and choose which courses we want to use to make up that final 16 hours. At the completion of the 40 hours, you have to get a live scan background check, and then you submit an application and the state processes it and you get your guard card.
Yeah.
And real quick, Mark, so yeah. Not to get too far into the weeds on this, but the 40 hours Jesse's referencing is that's to be a security guard in the state of California. Other states have very different rules on this. Some states have far less rules around this, but that's the process for California. It should be noted, though, that if you want to carry a firearm as a guard, there's additional requirements, another 16 hours of training on top of that. If you want to carry a baton, there's another 8 hours on top of that. If you want to, those are the two main ones. We have other courses, CPR, capstone courses, which kind of bring it all together. Our full kind of gamut of training is really meant to be an 80-hour So if you're kind of assuming what level of training are these guards going through, it's about 80 hours, hopefully. But at the most kind of basic level, you can get through all three levels within 40 hours of a full 5-day course.
And what's trending in this industry? Because we know that there's talk about budgetary cutbacks and police force that are being considered by some of these cities and different municipalities. It's expensive to have a police officer, so you start thinking about how to, you know, even security cameras, right? So we've got a couple of businesses that are in the security camera world, and there's ways to sort of even augment private security guards with technology. Thinking about the state of that industry, it feels like the security industry itself is certainly growing. And I'm wondering, is the guard portion maybe growing a little bit faster now that law enforcement is maybe preoccupied or being cut back?
So little known stat, there's actually more private security in California, and I believe in the nation, than there are public, like, sworn peace officers. So it's already probably way bigger than most people give it credit for and would even know. And the demand for private security is through the roof. There's always demand. We have PPOs, what we call PPOs, private patrol operators. These are security guard companies that are reaching out to us and forming a relationship with us regularly, saying, hey, we need 16 guards for this. It's pretty constant. So the demand is there. What's happened, I mean, getting a little bit into the business side of it and outside of the tactics and training, is that obviously private security pays less on average than a sworn peace officer, right? And by the way, as it should, I mean, peace officers go through a whole different level of vetting, training, responsibility, right? So I'm not at any level saying that they should be paid the same. They should not. That said, there's a gap there, right? And it's an interesting question and point, because my hope and candidly my prayer is that this whole kind of rhetoric around whether it's defunding or decreasing funding or moving away from law enforcement, I hope that's something that is soon to pass. I think we need more, not less. I think training is extremely important for these folks, and mistakes happen or bad things can happen even outside of that. But in general, I have so many cops that are like family, near and dear to my heart. I know their heart and I know their level of training, and they're across the board amazing humans who are literally putting their life on the line for an income, as you referenced earlier, that while it's not poverty level, by no means is it commensurate with the level of risk that they're putting themselves out there for, right?
Yeah.
So I think we need to grow that side, not decrease it. That said, there's no doubt that as this pendulum is shifting a little bit, the demand for the private security industry is increasing. And you're a business guy, extremely proficient in the business world. And if you just look at the laws of supply and demand, if you keep increasing the demand on the private security side, in order for the supply to catch up with that, there's going to have to be a shift where they're starting to be compensated a little bit better, or at least there's going to be more unique PPOs that are going to exist that are going to be higher level of qualifications, right, who will pay their guards more, and they're going to get higher paying contracts, and it's still going to be less than the sworn, but they're going to be able to fill a pretty important void. And I think we'll see that happen.
You know, it's interesting on that, as we're just sort of, I'm sort of spitballing here a little bit. You think about, I have a number of friends who are cops. Some have said things like, I don't know if I really want to be a cop in this environment. I don't know if I want my kids to be cops. Those kind of things are happening. Those conversations are happening in areas where people were growing up thinking, I want to be a police officer when I grow up. And I'm feeling like the desire for people to, or the aspiration of being a police officer, that that feels like it's dissipating a little bit in today's with today's youth. Certainly with people who don't need to do it anymore. You know, it ain't worth it anymore if I'm going to be sort of taking, people are going to be taking pot shots at me. I don't need it. I don't need the hassle, right? And I would have to assume that it's sort of that way for the security guard as well, or the person who's, you know, private security. And so as you think about this supply and demand curve, it's like, yeah, there's more of a need, but yet there's less candidates. I have to imagine there's less candidates entering into that that arena who are really, you know, the best of the best wanting to get in, and the competitive nature of becoming, you know, a police officer or even a supervisor in a private security company. It's like, is the bar getting lowered a little bit just because it has to be?
I hope and pray it's not. Mark, and you know, supply and demand, right? Econ 101 would say that what would happen is that the demand is not going to go away. Look, I don't care what happens and what the media throws out there. The concept that there needs to be individuals out there that are trained and willing and able to protect other individuals, right? That's not going away. If anything, the demand is going to keep going up. So what may have to happen over time is just going to have to be that the pay scale is going to have to move commensurate with that to where it gets the right types of people back re-engaged again. And it's unfortunate that's what's becoming maybe necessary. I just hope that, I believe that we have short memories and that we are dealing with a pretty crazy, extremely crazy 2020. And just we're at a point in time when everything is so politicized, but that, you know, in the years to come, we're going to stabilize and find ourselves back in an environment where it's pro-America, it's pro-blue line, and people understand that these guys are out there doing good things.
You bet. You know, I took this down to normally our show is very uplifting about chasing your entrepreneurial dream. And there's obviously parts of what's happening in society that are a little more sobering, if you will. And we happen to be touching on some of those topics today. So I appreciate you indulging me as you have to deal with this sort of thing on a daily basis. Some of us only think about it occasionally, but no matter, any of us who turn on the news are consistently bombarded with, these negative stories and that kind of thing. So, but thinking about how do we end this, or, you know, as we start to, you know, let you guys maybe have the final thought, because I mean, there's the sporting club, right? These are things you're doing good for society. You are helping people to become safer, to do things that they love in a safe way, getting young people exposed to responsible gun ownership, whether it be hunting or hanging out with their family members, going through and going and getting something to eat for dinner and living off the land and all these kinds of things that are really, you know, sort of practical in their own way, and really helpful, I think, for us as just citizens to be able to have that. So if we were wrapped today a little bit, maybe with each of you guys, just maybe wrap this, I mean, we'll put this on more of a positive spin. And also want to know, okay, people want to get involved with what you're doing, to get trained or to get an introduction to you, what do they do? Maybe you want to start us off on that, Jesse?
Yeah, so on the Blaster Sporting Club aspect of it, the whole goal is to create and foster a safe, family-friendly environment where people can take that path to responsible gun ownership. And that's the forefront of what we want to do. That's our ethos. That's our mission statement. And it's working. And it's working very, very well. As far as how to get involved, plastersportingclub.com. You can check out the website. We have a lot of good pictures up there, some good frequently asked questions. And you're always more than welcome to stop by when we're open. CCW, if you're going down that route, which as it has been discussed, that there's a lot of it going on, www.safta-inc.com. We'd love to get that conversation started as far as the steps necessary to be taken to end up with the CCW.
Okay. And maybe, Brandon, you started this whole relationship when you, I think you reached out to me a couple of years ago. So why don't we let you sort of wrap it up and maybe just some closing thoughts.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Again, I just want to give thanks to you for not just this opportunity for Jesse and I to come on today, but just for all that you do, all of your networking events, all of your initiative that you take it, with our kind of the entrepreneurial efforts of our community, which I know is really your mission. And it's extremely unique. You know, you asked a while back, kind of like what got this whole thing started. I'll go super high level, but from an entrepreneurial venture standpoint, it's something I'm super excited and passionate about is the fact that like Jesse and I kind of had this dream. So Jesse and I are Del Oro grads. We were best buds since we were sophomores. And we always talked about it, like in high school, like, you know, you're boys and you kind of hang out, oh, we should open a business together someday. Oh yeah. Like, of course you say that, right? And then as time progressed, hey, we should open up a shooting range someday. And we're like, oh yeah, we'll totally do that. And it's just kind of a cool, and I feel that I've been extremely blessed. It's been a combination of some grit and some hard work, of course. You know that that's always a huge part of it. Also some good fortune maybe that presents itself at the right times. But here we are, right? We went to high school together. I went in the Marines. Jesse went in the Army. I went to business school at University of Arizona. Moved back here. I'm mostly a commercial real estate guy by business trade. And started the company, and my best friend decides to move back out and kind of run it for me day to day. And then we venture together to start the new company. So it was a really, really cool entrepreneurial venture. And we're not done yet. I mean, we've got two businesses together, and I'm sure we're going to keep going just like you do and try to create more and more, maybe businesses that kind of feed off of one another. So it's motivating to me. I feel very fortunate for that. Closing thoughts. One of the main themes of this whole thing has been not just what we provide access to, but also the importance of being disciplined. I have in my signature block that I send out with all my emails is a George Washington quote. It says, "A free people ought not be armed, but disciplined." Right, and we take that extremely seriously. So there were a lot of different calls to action that Jesse put out there. I would just tell you this. If you did any of those, you'll get a hold of Jesse and I, right? You can go to safta-inc.com. You can go to plastersporting.com. You can just email office@plastersporting.com. I mean, there's a lot of ways, but either way, it's Jesse and I run these companies together. It's not like you're going to go into some crazy call center here. Like, if you are intrigued about what we do, either on the CCW training side or on the private shooting range membership side, in either case, just email, you know, office@plastersporting.com, for example, and you'll get a hold of Jesse and I, and we'll take it from there.
This is a true entrepreneurial story to me. This feels a lot like the American dream. You know, Jesse Meeker, Brandon Banks coming together as buddies and building this successful business. And I agree, you guys are only just beginning, and it's happening right here. This is what small business is all about. This is what America is all about. So thank you guys for both for how you've helped me personally, but also what you do for this community that we all three love. So thanks a lot for sharing your story.